A new study on artificial intelligence in higher education says students are seeking clearer policies for AI use in the classroom. You're listening to SDPB's Teacher Talk. I'm Lori Walsh. The report from Gallup and the Lumina Foundation indicates that more than half of students say at least some of their courses don't have clear policies around AI use. Gina Benz has been teaching high school for more than 25 years. Jackie Wilbur is director of the Center for Student and Professional Services at the University of South Dakota. I talked with them about what educators can do when facing AI overwhelm.
It feels very overwhelming at times. And when it first came, it was a bit of a, this special little thing, we'll see what happens. But it is here, full force. And in the schools, we're getting training and messaging about how will you incorporate it, how will you not, you know, how are you going to weave AI into your instruction? Who should do that? Who shouldn't? And then it all goes to also the students and when can they use AI? When can they not? It's so much. I could go on and on.
Have you seen something move this quickly in education technology in the past? Do you have a memory? You've been teaching for more than 25 years. Mm-hmm. Do you have a memory of something else coming along at this dizzying speed?
Yeah, I think speed, yes, but not the quantity. Mm. With AI, there's so much to consider and so many different angles, and it's more about the amount that's having to be processed.
Okay. Jackie Wilbur, everyone's racing to innovate, adapt, implement. Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons of all that, of that speed and the fact that this is here and we're adjusting to it and trying to maximize it?
I don't know if we even have time to weigh the pros and cons, right? Mm. Like it's happening. It's been 3 years since generative AI tools have been broadly accessible to the public, and these questions came at the same time that the technology advanced. As soon as it came out, the questions emerged that Gina just articulated. Mm. How do we use it? When do we use it? What are the parameters? When are the parameters? And those questions are continuing to evolve as the technology evolves.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we get the luxury of weighing the pros and cons of the speed. The speed is a given.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. So you're exactly right. We don't know the right answers yet. Mm-hmm. It feels like one big experiment. Yeah. At least that's how it feels to a teacher in the classroom.
What are the ethics? What is the environmental impact?
Yeah.
What is the cost? What is the cost of not innovating? So what do we know about AI use in education? Where are we looking to find some, you know, key factors?
Well, when you mentioned that you were getting daily press releases in your inbox, I had an inbox drop today that came from Gallup. And the Lumina Foundation, along with Gallup, just released an executive summary along with a survey of 4,000 students who are pursuing their associate's and bachelor's degree about their use in AI. So I read through that in preparation for today to discuss. And I'm just going to go over very briefly some of the key findings from that 4,000-person study. Mm-hmm. The first thing is that over half of college students use artificial intelligence to do their coursework on a daily or weekly basis, but 13% said they never use it at all.
Huh.
The students who are using AI are saying that they're using it mostly to understand complex course materials. More than half of college students say that their schools discourage or prohibit the use of AI for their schoolwork. And in spite of that, those regulations, many of those students are still using AI in spite of them. Students frequently experience unclear or uneven course rules, so their AI policies might change from class to class, or they feel like there's vague language about what the parameters are in AI. Nearly 3 in 10 college students say that their school is not training them to use artificial intelligence. And then lastly, 47% of college students have given at least a fair amount of time to considering changing their major due to the impact of AI on the job market.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Time to pick a new major.
Potentially, or at least it's making them consider it.
Think about, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything that stood out on the report to you, Gina?
What really stood out to me was it in chart three, it showed a lot of different ways students might use AI. And yeah. I think so often our minds automatically go to they're having AI write their essays. They're having AI write their
They're cheating.
And the chart, in my opinion, really just had of like eight options. One of them would feel like cheating. And that was the exact clarity I needed. All the different ways that would be ethical for students to use AI. And then that opens a door for me to how I might try to incorporate this or that.
I was surprised by the number of students who said they use it to help them understand complex material, which I don't know exactly what that means.
Oh, I do. I learned it this past week.
Tell me.
Yes, I'm so fortunate. So I teach technology and education at USF, and I have a student who showed me how he was using AI to study his notes from his political science class. So he takes notes, he handwrites them, and then he uploads the picture to ChatGPT, and ChatGPT reads his notes, types them up, and then highlights key points and adds extra points in there for him so that he has typed up notes that are even more complete than his handwritten notes. And then he asked ChatGPT to quiz him on these things. And when the questions are too easy, he says, I want harder questions. And he gets harder questions. And he has found success. He's getting good grades in this class.
Oh.
And here's the kicker. You ready?
Mm.
This is a 50-year-old man.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Non-traditional student.
Non-trad, non-traditional student who is killing it in his political science class. And he attributes some of it to AI.
Fascinating.
Helping him study.
Right.
I've also seen students, and I've used AI for this reason myself. I'll read a paragraph in a textbook, right? Say a student gets assigned a chapter in a science textbook, and there's a section where they just go, I'm not getting it, for a lack of a better term. You can put that section into AI and say, summarize this for me in a seventh grade reading level, or break down this particular concept. And so then it will regurgitate the material to them in a way that's more digestible.
I would have anticipated it was a time-saving device. And that's on the list, too. But more students are using it to understand complex material than are using it to save time doing tasks.
So
that's what they said in the survey.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So with my USF student, essentially AI is his tutor.
Sure.
It's taking the place of a human tutor or going to some sort of tutoring session.
How important do you think is it that he is taking his own notes in the class? These handwriting notes.
That's such a key point, in my opinion, that it always starts with the person, that the person has the original thoughts and ideas, and then AI can come along and elevate it in a way.
Yeah. So what do we know about what's happening in higher ed? You mentioned USF and you're teaching technology in the classroom. Are
which
there
is,
other?
Yeah, which you know, is a class I took when I went to USF in the 1990s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So technology
has changed. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
I just got a press release from Dakota State University saying they are expanding their programs to include an education specialist in education and technology through the College of Education, not a PhD, but beyond a master's degree to talk technology and ed. So there's Dakota State doing different things to help teachers and professionals use AI and technology tools. SDSU, USD. Jackie, what do they have at USD?
Yeah, USD has both an undergraduate and a graduate degree in AI.
Yeah, and SDSU just announced that they are developing a Center for AI Innovation and Emergent Technologies. We've also got universities around the nation. Just do a quick Google search and you'll see all these universities have AI majors, concentrations, grad degrees.
Integration in classrooms. But to the point of the poll we were just looking at, there are a lot of students who are saying we don't have the clarity. So clarity is coming as the universities are developing their programs.
I would also add to that, Lori, that it's not just about the degree programs. We get quite a bit of guidance, I feel, at the University of South Dakota on best practices of use of AI. There's an AI strategic planning committee that meets regularly that is a mix of administrators and faculty members. In the School of Education, we have common language about AI use that everyone puts in their syllabus, and then there's customizable pieces where you get to make decisions based because it's you have academic freedom as a faculty member about what the parameters are for your class about when students can use AI. And so it's not prescriptive, but it's definitely provided guidance. And I think, at least from my perspective, that USD has been very, very responsive to AI advancements, not just in forming degrees, but also in helping us be in guidance as faculty members.
I will add to that. My school district has been very responsive as well. And every week I get tips about AI in the classroom, but I'm getting overwhelmed.
Yeah.
It's getting to be so much and I can't wrap my head around it anymore. And for one hot minute while I was writing this post that you can find in our blog, I was like, am I going to stay teaching? Because this is feeling so overwhelming right now.
So after 25 years of teaching and the companion blog pieces at sdpb.org/teachertalk, you had a moment where you're like, can I even be doing, do I even want to be doing this anymore? That is an overwhelm for you.
Yes, it was like, this is too much. Maybe there's other things I could be doing with my life that wouldn't bring this amount of anxiety to me or worry or work.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did you address that?
I went back to the advice that I have been telling my teacher pathway students again and again over the past few weeks as they're writing their APA style research paper, and that is just do the next right thing. Mm. Don't get so far ahead of yourself. What is the next right thing? The one thing you should do next. And so I said, Gina, what's the next right thing you should do with AI? And I went back to my conversation with that student, and I might implement some of the things he talked about.
Right. The using handwritten notes, and expanding then, on them,
yes.
Organizing them, quizzing yourself, kind of how to learn complicated material.
Yeah.
That's one way to help your students. Yeah. Jackie, what is your next right thing? Or maybe you're not overwhelmed. Are you overwhelmed with all the information and opportunities and possibilities and responsibilities?
It's interesting. I don't feel overwhelmed. And so I do want to pick your brain a little bit more, Gina, about the parts that feel overwhelming, because I'm wondering what I might be just blindly turning some eyes. I do feel, of course, concerned about the environmental impacts of AI. I am concerned about the ethical impacts of AI, as I've seen more videos about what robots are able to do that are powered by AI. It can feel very sci-fi in reality. You know, there are things like that do make my head spin. But in terms of my daily work and my work with students, I do feel, at least at the present moment, that I have a pretty good handle on how I'm moving forward with AI. That being said, I can completely understand there's so much and it's moving so quickly. So I hope, Gina, it didn't sound like I was in any way saying I don't get why you're feeling that way. So I definitely do. But I would like to know more about what parts of it are feeling overwhelming to you.
I think the part that feels the most overwhelming is when I introduce AI into the classroom, I'll give students tools, teach them some great ethical, effective ways to use AI. But then what prevents them from slipping into the more unethical ways of using AI? I use proximity. I walk around the room constantly. I try to adjust my assignments so that AI can't necessarily do what I'm asking the students to do. But still, students are so smart. They still find ways to have AI do the thinking for them more than I would like it to. And I want to reduce that temptation that they have, but that temptation is so real for them because, A, they feel overwhelmed and they feel like they're not smart enough. B, they have work and activities. C, they're competing for things. That's where I am.
Yeah.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Please.
Do you feel like your students weren't cheating before the invention of AI?
It was very easy. It was much easier to catch plagiarism.
Okay.
And I don't like to say it that way because I'm not a police officer trying to catch them on the back end of things. I try so hard to be proactive so that it never becomes an issue. I whenever possible, I'd rather be proactive than reactive.
Sure.
But catching plagiarism is a whole lot easier.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I know you had mentioned the quality of the writing in your when you have been grading here lately and what strong quality it is. And then there's the question then of, well, has this been run through AI and that's why there's no grammatical errors, or is the student writing at this high of level? And I think in terms of wanting to be an effective teacher and teach them correctly, it's best if you can know where they're actually at, right? And so if there's this dissonance between where they are actually at and what the work is that they produce for you, that is overwhelming.
Well, I think it's also just a whole philosophical shift that I have to wrap my brain around, because should I be teaching the same things? Should I still be teaching semicolons? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because Grammarly can take care of that and apparently is taking care of that for them. And I'm okay with that. That's okay with me, but not okay with the teacher two doors down.
Right.
And yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Again, that clarity that we're seeing show up in the surveys is real. Mm-hmm. That we don't have the clarity and people have disagreements. I don't think Grammarly does an effective job of punctuation. So I would never trust Grammarly with my semicolon.
Okay. There it is, from the journalist.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kurt Vonnegut didn't use semicolons at all because he said, you know, people don't talk in semicolons. So I think they're useful, but you have to be kind of into it.
The shift I see is, as an English teacher, content, what they say, has to matter more, but also the art of writing, rhetoric. Are they using repetition and parallelism and maybe even double entendre in really clever, effective ways?
Yeah.
So that voice and personality and power comes through.
Yeah. And my fear would be if students, you mentioned them being concerned that they're not smart enough, or you know, if smart enough becomes this is what good writing is and it's homogenized, then you have taken away voice and colloquialism and all kinds of things, and you've taught students that the right voice is the computer voice, which is a, you know, combination of everything that's on the internet, and that could be, you know, really harmful.
I don't disagree with you, Lori, but I would also say that I think that's happened to a degree already, right? We standardize the English language, and so a lot of colloquialisms in various parts of the United States wouldn't be considered quote-unquote proper English or standard English if you wrote it in an essay, right? Or the ways in which many people speak in their homes are not the ways that if it were graded in an English class would be considered quote-unquote correct. And so I do think that we have done that to the English language already, right? And so I don't know. I feel like many of the questions I'm having are extensions of the ethical questions I've asked myself about education all along. Like, what is right? You know, is Kurt Vonnegut right? We don't speak in semicolons. Should we follow him? Or are semicolons like a really valid form of punctuation that we need to teach in all ninth grade classes, you know? And I think so many people have pretty strong opinions about things like that, that it's always going to be under conversation and discussion.
And that goes back to doing the next right thing.
Yeah.
You know, how do you fight that overwhelm, that anxiety of all these things?
Yeah.
What I'm hearing Jackie saying is, like, these are questions in education all the time. Do I teach the semicolons, or do I teach, you know, if my student comes in, they have this wonderful way of talking, you know, how much do I push them into standard English, and how do I preserve that voice that they showed up with that I just love and adore? That's education. And AI is amplifying that and maybe quickening the pace. So you just, if you take Gina Benz's advice, you just do the next right thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to say a little bit more. I think part of the overwhelm comes from being paranoid. It's paranoia that my students aren't learning how they need to learn. And there's new ways of learning. But some of the old ways are still really good. And I want them to learn so badly. And so there's a paranoia, which is the opposite of trust. And what I've always loved about my own classroom is that feeling of trust between me and my students. and the integrity that goes with that. So I just think that paranoia slips in and really eats away at me.
Yeah.
Gina, I feel called to remind you that every single study says the most important factor in any student's life is their teacher. And I can't imagine a world in which AI surpasses that. It cannot do what humans do, which is show trust, show care, show support, be there for them in a physically present way. And you do that in spades. So I have no doubt that you are instilling a love of learning in your students every single day, regardless of the acceleration of AI. And I bet on you every single time in this situation.
This is why we have BFAWs, best friends at work.
But I would say to you what I'm saying to all teachers. I would say that to every teacher. I really would. You are the most important person in a student's educational journey. You always will be. AI will never be a person. It's the only thing it can't do.
Let's leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gina Benz teaches at Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls. She is a recipient of the Milken Educator Award. Jackie Wilbur directs USD's Center for Student and Professional Services. And you can find all the companion research on our blog, sdpb.org/teachertalk. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.